breaks out, nothing but silence. From the mainstream media show, we want to know about nonviolence. Where do we go? Nonviolence Radio. Tell your friend, tell your foe.
Ooh, nonviolence.
Challenging radio. Silence.
Nonviolence.
Challenging
radio.
Silence.
Ooh, nonviolence radio.
Challenging silence.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Nonviolence Radio. I'm your host, Stephanie Van Hook, and I'm here in the studio with my co-host and Nonviolence in the News anchor, Michael Negler. Nonviolence is not the inanity that it has been portrayed as across the ages, as Gandhi said, but it's actually a power that comes from within us that we can use to help creatively solve some of the all of the toughest problems that the world is facing today, if only we understood it a little bit better. And so the aim of this show is to help us to really get into how nonviolence works on some of these issues. And we talk with scholars and activists and people who have been really inspired to put nonviolence into practice in a variety of ways. And on today's show, we'll be covering some of the latest nonviolence in the news. And then later in the show, we'll be hearing from a gentleman from Israel-Palestine who is working really hard to help build a nonviolence movement. So not just individual actions in separate villages, but actually trying to connect the movement. And his name is Ali Abu Awad, and he had recently visited Katadi, and we had the opportunity to interview him for a documentary film that we're making called The Journey Home. So you'll get to hear it first here at Nonviolence Radio. But let's turn now to Nonviolence in the News with Michael Negler.
Thank you very much, Stephanie. Yeah, and as usual, there's just so much happening. And as usual, I'm going to try to talk about three categories. What are some of the resources out there? What are the news events that we should think about and analyze? And what are some of the events coming up? So for resources, I wanted to say that there is an opportunity to visit Iran with Mubarak Awad and Medea Benjamin. You may not be familiar with those names. Mubarak was one of the leading lights in the first Intifada in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, was deported from Israel and founded Nonviolence International in Washington, D.C. And Medea Benjamin, I'm pretty sure, needs no introduction. She is, I guess, most closely associated with Code Pink right now. But this is called An Affordable Travel Opportunity, A Cultural Encounter and a Peace Trip. It takes place May 11th through 22nd. There certainly is interest in international peace in Iran right now. Meta will actually be doing a webinar at the end of April for a festival called the International Peace Festival that will take place in Tehran. So moving on, there are quite a few resources being made available for people who want to get into action, and that is so important because at a time like this, people are, so to speak, coming out of the woodwork. They are being shaken out of their apathy. They need to act. They want to act. But as Stephanie was just saying, how do we know what to do? We have been given so little education about nonviolence and how it works. We tend to follow the examples that are closest at hand, and they can be misleading, and they can lead us to failure. And then a lot of people just, you know, rub their hands and go back and say, back to the drawing board, or, well, that didn't work. So one of the concepts that we focus on in Meta is called work versus work, where we look at the long-term effects and not just the immediate results of an action. But Rise Up has something called Rise Up to Action, and I can give you a phone number for that. It's 1-855-440-1800. It's based in San Francisco, and they said they will walk you through every step. I have a colleague, Robert Burrows, who's been working in the field of nonviolence as long as I have, and he had a beautiful, superb article in Popular Resistance this week. Here are just some of the outtakes. So Robert is asking what you were looking for. What's your issue? If you want to strike at the core of human violence, look at his article, My Promise to Children. There's a long website, but embedded in that website is StrategyWheel/constructive program. It sure sounds like Professor Burroughs has been looking at our website. If you want to tackle simultaneously the military, climate, and environmental threats to human existence, the Flame Tree Project to Save Life on Earth would be a place to go. And their URL is simple enough that I can tell you what it is, and you might be able to find it. I'll try to say it slowly. It's tinyurl.com/flametree. Okay, so that'll tackle everything. But if you wanted to resist particular elite initiatives that threaten peace, justice, and sustainability, he reminds us that if you don't plan, organize, and act strategically, you will have wasted your time. And he reminds us of 15 February 2003, when we had up to 30 million people in over 600 cities around the world participated in rallies against the war on Iraq. It was called the largest protest event in human history. And guess what? In terms of working, that is, stopping the war, it failed. And one of the increments that I've been noticing recently in sophistication on the part of movement people is this dawning awareness that one-off protests have a function, no doubt, but it's quite limited. And we need to move on, even from the marvelous Women's March that we just witnessed in D.C. back in January. We need to move on from that to something more coordinated and sustainable. So you might be interested, I'm still leaning on colleague Robert Burroughs, you might be interested in Nonviolent Strategy Wheel and other strategic thinking that are on the following website, Nonviolent Campaign Strategy. Or the parallel one, nonviolentliberationstrategy.wordpress.com. I realize these are fascinating things, and I'm partly pleased and partly embarrassed to say that I haven't seen them yet. I didn't know about these sites, but they look right on. Okay, and finally, if you want to join the worldwide movement to end violence in all its forms, there's a document now called The People's Charter to Create a Nonviolent World. Website being thepeoplesnonviolencecharter.wordpress.com. He concludes this article by saying that the president, whose name I think I won't pronounce, has formidable institutional power at his disposal. What most people do not realize is that we have vastly greater power at our disposal to stop him and the elite and their institutions that he represents. But we need to deploy our power strategically if we are to put this world on a renewed trajectory to peace, justice, and sustainability.
For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to Nonviolence Radio, and we're in the segment right now, Nonviolence in the News. Michael Nagler, our news anchor, is reviewing some of the resources that are out there, mostly on the web, where people can get involved and learn about this idea of building a nonviolent world through nonviolent resistance or nonviolent action, as well as nonviolence learning. And Michael, so what you were just describing about the resources suggested by Professor Burroughs, which I think deserve a little bit analysis, because how can you talk about the way that organizing against a particular set of people is one part of nonviolence, but I'm also reminded of another, a deeper form of nonviolence where the Buddha says, you know, you conquer 10,000 people and you've only made 10,000 enemies. You conquer yourself and you've created peace. Can you talk about that kind of tension between the inner dimension of the need to develop nonviolence personally, because that's the embodiment of the world, as well as the idea of organizing for certain policies and that creative tension there?
I'll be happy to talk about that, Stephanie, and also I'll talk about where I thought you were going. Mm-hmm. there was a conference in 2005 in Berkeley that Rabbi Michael Lerner and I put on called the First Spiritual Activism Conference. Mm-hmm. And I think the term, the meme that has become current is subtle activism. And I think one of the things that we're starting to realize in this kind of basket of greater sophistication that's dawning, and I hope it that the sun rises pretty quickly, is this concept that, there's this truism, peace begins with us and peace comes from within, but we need to know that there are specific disciplines that you can follow that will enable you to, and I'm thinking now both of Gandhi and of King, mm-hmm. to convert anger and fear into creative action. And that is really the source, the spring, from which nonviolence will emerge. In Ali Awad's interview that we're going to be listening to later, he will tell you how he was approached by a very hostile Israeli soldier at a checkpoint. And undoubtedly, some fear, some anger arose in him, but he decided to look at that soldier and smile at him and say, gee, I'm sorry you're stuck out there in the rain and I'm sitting in here in this comfortable car. And it had a marvelous effect. So that's one part of it. But where I thought you were going was the difference between a sustained constructive program and a one-off obstructive program or resistance program. And that's why I was so pleased to see the term constructive program show up in one of Professor Burroughs' URLs, because Gandhi said, and we've experienced it so many times, if you are mainly against something, either one way or another, that campaign is going to end. Either you will succeed or you will fail, and in either case, your movement is over. What he invented to carry on from episode to episode was what he called constructive program, which is largely non-confrontational, though at a certain point it can really get in your face, and which no one can stop you from doing, like spinning homespun cotton. And that enables you to feel that you're engaged with others continuously over time. And then when you're needed to, and I'm going to borrow a phrase from Joanna Macy here, when you have to stop the worst of the damage, and there are times, you know, if they come for your neighbor, you've got to intervene, not go onto your cushion and meditate and you're not build a co-op. You've got to intervene. But when the time comes, if you can intervene on the basis of that long-term sustained community constructive effort, you can do so much more strongly. I've written so much about constructive program, and I think I'll leave it here and just refer people to the wonderful books that I've written. Yeah, Stephanie.
Well, it occurs to me that what's wonderful about having some nonviolence in the news in this program is that when we're engaging with the corporate media and the corporate news, it's saying to us, this is what's happening in the world. It's telling a picture. It's painting a picture of the world for us. And then it's giving us a sense of hopelessness. This is what's happening. You really can't do anything about it. So just take it in and get powerless. And the fun thing about nonviolence in the news is that it's a lot of different information from events and learning that actually help us in our discernment process about where our best engagement is and how to be most strategic about it. So there's a really living, active, creative quality in it. So what else do you have for us, Michael Nagler?
Well, before I move on to other events, of which I have many, I'd like to respond a little bit to what you said, Stephanie, that the talk that I've been asked to give for the people in Iran on that webinar is something like nonviolent future, reality or delusion. And I'm going to start off by saying we should not sit back and try to decide which it is. Rather, we should get engaged in making the right outcome come about. And that's pretty much how I respond to people who always ask me to predict what's going to happen. What's going to happen depends on what we think and do. Mm.
As Mahatma Gandhi said, the future depends on what we do in the present.
Right.
So what else do you have for us happening in the present?
In the present, as we all know, on February 23rd, the National Guard and the police raided the Osseti Sakhalin camp and evicted the protesters at its Standing Rock. But despite the eviction, the example of Standing Rock continues to mobilize indigenous activists all over the world, and not just in defense of water, but in defense of land and other rights. Quoting from P. Black Cloud Sr., a Sioux leader who was among the first to stand against the pipeline at Standing Rock, he told Truth Out recently, "When everybody showed up, including the clergymen of the world, I stood up on the bridge and I felt the meshing of all the religions, all the spirits, all the creators of all nations, and all the colors meshed as one people." So the phrase of neocolonization of indigenous people has come up. There were Mayan elders who came up from Guatemala to stand with the people at Standing Rock. And they said, "We must respect water and where it comes from. It is a spring of life. Water is the blood of our Mother Earth." There are about 100 companies going on now to other events in the U.S. About 100 companies or more have pulled their advertising from Breitbart News. And since we are in the news business here, I have to say this might be professionally unethical for me to say this, but I'm actually glad. That traditionally, it's the money is often what makes the final difference in a campaign. I'm thinking of the civil rights movement when the boycotts got started. And I don't know. It shouldn't be that way. The mere appeal to compassion and to the humanity of the other should be enough to make it work. But often there needs to be a bottom line for it to really click in. So I'm happy about this divestment project. There's also a group called People's Action, which has trained thousands of people what to do at town halls and how to, quote, bird dog your representatives who refuse to see you. That brings to my mind a wonderful picture of Medea Benjamin, who was a rather petite woman, bird-dogging the chairman, the CEO of Nike, one day stalking him across a lobby. It's just somehow it was a very, very pleasant and very inspiring little picture. Now, as we all know, the president, who came down very, very hard on immigration, recently made a drastic shift, saying that he's open to plan to grant legal status to millions of undocumented immigrants. That was reported by the Christian Science Monitor. But what they didn't say was why he may have done that. And he did that, obviously, because of the tremendous kickback that happened in every community, including our local communities around here. That it just is too obvious. We will not let them take our people. We will reach out to our neighbors. That this whole campaign has inspired me very much because it's really led me to see and believe with kind of hard vision that America will not become a country of hate. There's just no matter how much they rattle those sabers, I think the American people will never stand for it. Now, the Christian Science Monitor, while we're on that excellent newspaper, reported recently about this vandalized Jewish cemetery in the South, in Louisville, where the Muslim community immediately rallied to help them repair it. They had asked for $20,000, the Jewish community had. In a short time, the donations reached $65,000. And by my latest information, they've reached 125,000. Now, I wanted to comment on that in this respect. The reports in the Christian Science Monitor and elsewhere gave you the impression that Muslims are seizing upon this as an opportunity to rectify their image and to counteract the anti-Islamic, Islamophobic propaganda. Now, I'm sure there's an element of that, But there's a more important element that the mainstream media will not be reporting, and that is just plain human empathy. Just this is human nature. And I'm reminded that last year when a man named Adel Termos was in a bazaar in Beirut, a suicide bomber exploded his charge, killed about 9 people. Mr. Termos was there with his 9-year-old daughter. He saw that there was another bomber about to do the same thing. And instead of running away, he threw himself on this person, knocked him to the ground, and absorbed the full explosion into himself. And the news reports, one of them at least, said this is a direct quote, he broke human nature. My comment, my way of looking at it, he engaged human nature. He showed what human nature is really capable of.
Thank you, Michael Nagler. You're listening to Nonviolence Radio, and this is our news portion of the show, which is where we explore resources and nonviolence in the present moment in this country and in the world. So, Michael, on that question of human nature, nonviolence often helps us. Nonviolence becomes more effective when we draw from a very strong vision of the potential of a human being, and instead of seeing ourselves as in a negative light, redefining who we are. And in my free time, I'm a preschool teacher, and I work with 3, 4, 5, and 6-year-olds. And this question comes to mind often because in this setting of working with the smallest human beings that can move around and engage without adults moving them from place to place, what I find is that they respond very deeply to the ideas and concepts of love, peace, and justice. Hmm. These are at the earliest possible age of a human creature being alive. These are so fundamental to their society. And this is a very practical, it's not a philosophical question. This is a very practical, and there's a very practical implication of it that they respond to these ideas, these grandiose concepts so well because it's our nature to be just and it's our nature to be peaceful and it's our nature to, it is our nature to respond to love and to give love. So that human nature piece is so important. Yeah. Can you say anything more about what's going on in the world in the next 10 minutes, Michael?
Yeah, that is a beautiful observation, Stephanie. It reminded me of Pierre d'Aveyron, the wild child who was discovered in the 19th century, and he was not able to speak, but he had grown up in the woods with animals, and yet the investigator who took him in charge was able to show that he had a very keen sense of justice.
And no matter what background we all come from, we all do, and that's what the world is starting to discover, which is...
Yeah.
So amazing. So
well,
please.
In nonviolence, you absolutely depend on your awareness of that human nature, that element in the opponent. Otherwise, you have nothing to go on. But I wanted to say that recently in Iraq, there's a Tahrir Square in Baghdad as well as in Cairo. And on February 11th, there was a peaceful demonstration following calls by that Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr. Thousands of demonstrators and supporters showed up. Unfortunately, when they tried to cross a particular bridge and get to the green zone, government troops actually opened fire on them and 11 people were killed. So we will be watching events that take place in Iraq where there is an attempt to create a viable nonviolent movement. And a country that needs it very badly. If they can do it there, on the back-to-back with the incredible violence that they've experienced, I think then that will prove what we've just been saying about human nature, that there is that element that can always be recovered. Let me see. I guess I should move on to events.
Do a couple of events, and then I'd love to introduce this song, Los Cuatro Generales,
that
wanted us to hear, because music also plays an important role in nonviolence.
Yes.
So why don't you do a couple of events and we'll move on to that.
Saturday, March 4th in San Anselmo, the First Presbyterian Church will have a benefit for Standing Rock Legal Defense because they have switched from direct on-the-ground obstruction to legal defense. And that will be the timing is from 7 to 9 p.m. The suggested donation is $10 to $20. Then further on April 22nd, which is Earth Day, scientists will march. And this is one of the really interesting, qualitatively different, hopeful things happening in the nonviolence world right now. Bookstores, teachers, policemen, and a very interesting development, scientists are standing up, not just for their funding and their careers, but for the truth that they represent, especially, of course, around the issue of climate change. So scientists will be marching on Earth Day, and we hope many others will get in there to help explain to our neighbors that climate change is a dreadful threat and not at all a hoax. Then a few days later, 1 week later, April 29th happens to be the 100th day of the administration. People are going to gather in Washington, D.C. and across the country for the People's Climate March. The event is the organization is called the People's Climate Mobilization. They plan to put hundreds of thousands of people in the streets. And the mobilization is on April 29th, and they say, to change everything, we need everyone.
We need everybody on airplanes going across the country to D.C. Say more.
Suppose I don't open that particular can of worms, but I will say that the idea that nonviolence requires numbers is misleading. Gandhi said one satyagrahi is enough, and he actually carried out a campaign with one satyagrahi. That's a nonviolent activist. So the numbers part is wrong. And I think the march idea is, as we've said before, it is not going to do much unless we use it as an opportunity for education, for mutual support, and for networking. And this place to sign up for that, by the way, is 350.org. And here in Sonoma County, there is an interfaith witness, the Interfaith Council of Sonoma County, ICSC, will on Wednesday, March 15th, coming up pretty soon, outside of the City Hall in Santa Rosa, corner of Sonoma and Mendocino Avenues. At 5 o'clock, they will gather and hear some music, as we are about to do. 5:30 to 6:30 p.m., there will be a program. And this is one of the thousands of rallies and organizations coming together going on around the country to support our Muslim neighbors.
And then you had one more event coming up, which is something we ran into in Sebastopol, the Democracy Cafe. Can you tell people what that is?
I would be delighted.
Because it serves as a good model, even if folks aren't local, too.
Yeah. No, I think everyone should know about this. And, you know, we have a similar event in Meta itself called the Hope Tank, which we have once a month and which we have described and will describe more fully on our website very soon. But it suddenly dawned on us, having had these wonderful conversations for some years now, where great ideas came up and some of our most important projects were cradled in nurtured in Hope Tank, suddenly realized that this is part of what could become a revolution. It could become the house-to-house, living-room-to-living-room meetings. And then we were thrilled to discover in a little bookstore we like in Sebastopol, Many Rivers Books and Tea, that they're holding similar conversations called the Democracy Cafe. You need some guidelines for something like that, and they say always respond to the topic and not attack the people. It is not a debate group. They're not arguing. Everyone is allowed to speak. That's quite important. Be respectful. Think before you speak. Wow, what a change that would make. And you will hear things you disagree with. Before commenting, ask yourself first, am I about to respond emotionally? Emotions aren't necessarily bad, but they need to be kind of kept in their place so that you don't just lash out at someone that you disagree with.
Thank you very much, Michael. Now, we said on our show that we would begin to highlight some of our favorite nonviolent actions of the week as well. And so I had the honor, you said that I may share my favorite nonviolent action of either of the week or something that we've just wanted to share on the show that helped to bring out a principle in nonviolence. And so I was at a city council meeting in Petaluma on Monday, where at the end of the meeting, they were voting on whether or not to pass a resolution that would protect the more vulnerable populations in the Petaluma community, specifically those who are undocumented community members. And hundreds of people showed up to this event. And what I thought was very important was that this is an example of a bit of nonviolence from above, because we had the grassroots organizing there. That was amazing in itself, and we hope to have some people on the show in the near future to talk about what they did. But the idea for the resolution actually came from the city council members themselves, so we get a sense of nonviolence from the other side, from the side of government, first of all. Second of all, the mayor of Petaluma, a gentleman, Mayor Glass, he put this at the end item on the agenda, which in a way was a creative action, because if people wanted to engage with government, they couldn't just parachute in for their issue. They had to see that this is work, and there's a process involved in other decisions as well. And why not get involved in more decisions besides just this one, right? So I thought that was pretty creative. But then especially when it was time for this resolution to have open comments, Mayor Glass said to the community that knowing that most people there were there in favor of passing this resolution that would protect the undocumented folks in Petaluma, he said that we will not intimidate anybody in this hall, and we won't, and that means with applause or by booing. Because I thought that was very insightful, that sometimes just so much applause for the people with whom we agree will intimidate people who have another viewpoint. And so he helped to create an atmosphere where people felt that they could share their views without being demonized as individuals for having differing political views. And I thought that was a wonderful action on behalf of a government official that helped to promote not only a greater sense of democracy, but a sense of the real power of the human connection and nonviolence within that. Michael.
So true, Stephanie. And you know, there's a tricky line here between shaming a person for what they did and shaming them for who they are.
Right. That's really important. You're listening to Nonviolence Radio. I'm your host, Stephanie Van Hook, here in the studio with co-host Michael Nagler and news anchor. We're going to turn now to an interview with Ali Abu Awad, who is working to build a nonviolence movement in Israel-Palestine. So this, we've all heard about nonviolent resistance in the Holy Land, but we have not seen somebody really trying to pull together the entire movement in the same way that's happening in other places, such as the United States and really all over the world. How do we, asking this question at this time, how do we create a movement of movements? So we're very pleased to have a rough cut of an interview with Awad about who he is and a little bit about what he thinks nonviolence is and the work that he's doing. So I'm going to pull up the interview now, and you're going to hear Michael Nagler, who's interviewing him, talking with Luz Wire, who's also there, who's the filmmaker for this film, The Journey Home, that the Meta Center has been working on. And then Awad will be also talking about himself. So I'm going to bring it up and see what we've got here.
So if I start saying, good.
Okay. So here's, this is Michael talking and right now with, as they're setting up the interview. Michael, why don't you say a few words about Awad while this gets going?
Yeah, I was extremely pleased to come across Ali for two reasons. He's very, very solid, and I should almost say pure, about his concept of the depth of nonviolence and how it connects to the human image, as we were saying earlier. On the other hand, he's so effective. He wants to create a Palestinian National Nonviolent Movement. This is not just episode. Go ahead.
Palestinian Nonviolence Activists. And actually, I was born for a refugee family from 1948. And I was raised and grew in the West Bank near Hebron. And my mother was one of the leaders of PLO, Palestinian Liberation Organization, and she spent a few years in the Israeli prison. And when I was a child, I remember when she was arrested, I was 10 years old, and I saw her was beaten in front of my eyes. And that was enough to bring me to whatever you call it, violence, resistance. And then in 1990, after my participation in the first Palestinian uprising, the first Palestinian intifada, which has started in 1987, I was arrested with my mother. So finally, I spent 4 years in prison, and my mother spent 5 years in the Israeli prison. And actually, the first encounter with nonviolence was in prison, because first of all, I have to say that Palestinian political prisoners has succeeded to create some kind of a very, very organized system to lead and manage their daily life with a high level values of humanity and morality. You could see professors, teachers, the best people of the nation were in prison. So that was my university. So after three years in prison, we wanted to meet. I mean, me and my mother wanted to visit each other, and Israel refused. So we decided to go for a hunger strike that continued for 17 days of starving and struggling. And after that, we succeed to meet. Then I start learning about nonviolence. And then I was released by Oslo Peace Initiative. And when the second intifada started, as the failure of that initiative for many reasons, I was badly wounded by a settler in the near Hebron. And while I was having my medical treatment, my brother was very violently murdered by Israeli soldiers. Then after 1 year of struggling between revenge and giving up and trying to live normally, but you know, you are not the same person, it's not the same life. So thinking about revenge even was there, but the issue was, if it's about revenge, then it's about justice. What should be this punishment that I have to create to deal with my pain and my loss? And if it's about justice, so justice for me is to have my brother back. That's justice. But he will never come back. Does that mean that there is no justice? Then I remember reading about Malcolm X in prison, where he said, justice is just us. And I realized that justice is this step when we decide to give up being the victim of the victimizers and not to be in this prison of hatred and victimhood. And this happened actually also by meeting Israeli bereaved parents who have lost someone in the conflict, and my life has changed because I have never met an Israeli who cry, or you don't see the humanity of the other side. So I become a nonviolence activist, and I did many things, and I'm still doing big things.
So that was Ali Abu Awad in an interview with the Meta Center for a film, The Journey Home. And it's a film that is meeting with nonviolence activists and theorists and scientists who can tell the deeper story about what nonviolence is and how it works. And that was the first part of getting to know Ali Abu Awad a bit, this activist and from Israel-Palestine who's trying to pull together a movement of movements. Let's hear a little bit more from this rough cut audio from our film interview.
Roland?
So you're going to hear Luz Wired and Michael talking to Awad about the questions, what did you do to learn about nonviolence?
Books about Gandhi, Mandela mostly, Martin Luther King, actually inside the prison. That's where I first start after my hunger strike. Then after that, after my engagement in peace process and nonviolence, I tried to meet people. I tried to meet even, you know, I tried always to go back to the human being inside me. It seems like every one of us has this big library of humanity and nonviolence inside him. It's just to be able to meet the human being inside you and to discuss with him about yourself. And also, there are experts and amazing leaders in nonviolence that I met, but it was mostly lessons from life. I have never had a chance to go to university, not to conflict resolution, nothing. And I even don't think that I need that, but it, yeah. So it's from life, mostly.
So by now, after all of this, that exposure and learning, what does nonviolence mean to you now? What is nonviolence?
Well, nonviolence is mostly is about to be an artist of your humanity, to bring the best of you, not just by solving problems, but also by living, by experiencing, by practicing the human being that you have. Nonviolence is not about giving up your right to resist, actually it's the opposite. Nonviolence is not to be controlled. Nonviolence is to be the controller of your reaction. And nonviolence also is not to show your humanity to the other side. Nonviolence is about helping the other side to see his own humanity. I always say, and this is what I wrote in my book called Painful Hope, that hopefully will come soon. I said, nonviolence, it's not just when I say my weapon is my humanity, it's about your humanity is my weapon. And I have to be able to bring you to that place, and which is a hard job to do. It's a very hard job to do. So nonviolence means to have a taste for your life and to have a meaning of your existence. That's nonviolence.
So, Michael, do you want to comment on that while you and Lou are working on Ali's mic in the background?
Yes, you've already heard how much I was impressed with the accuracy and the depth of Ali's analysis. And I wanted to point out in particular, when he said it's not to be controlled, it's to be the controller, my mind immediately leapt to controlling the situation or controlling the other people. Mm-hmm. But in fact, he said the controller of your reaction. And that ties in with what you were saying earlier, Stephanie, about the inner dimension being the real wellspring of nonviolence. And that's how you manage that inner resource, that inner dimension, mm-hmm. by controlling your negative reaction. And it automatically kind of flips over to a corresponding positive, and then you've got the creative energy to work with. And then he spoke beautifully about how what you're really doing is showing the other person his humanity.
Right, let's tune back in.
Nonviolence activities. I can make a whole book about stories. Actually, one of these stories that lives with me always, when I came to a checkpoint, and in Hebron area, you know, it's cold in winter and it was raining, and there is a huge line of Palestinian cars that has been stopped by a soldier. And after I was waiting for 1.5 hours with my friend under this rain and cold, but it was warm in the car, I came to that soldier and I was expecting him to ask for my ID. Then he didn't, and when I opened the window, he came smiling and saying, "How is the checkpoint?" He was like celebrating my suffering, you know. Then I look at him and I said, "The checkpoint is terrible." Then he said, "Why?" And he smiled more because I complained. Then I smiled and I told him, "Because you are suffering." And he was totally shocked. And he said, "No, you are suffering." Then I said, "No, I'm in a warm car. Look at you. You look miserable under this rain. This, you know, anger is eating you. I really feel sorry about you." And then he said, "Who are you?" Then I said, "I'm a Palestinian activist." And then he said, "You know, this is the first time a Palestinian speaks about my suffering." Then I said, "Well, good morning. You didn't come here with empathy. So you just show me this part of your anger and hatred. What are you expecting me to see?" Then we start talking. I start telling me that he was born to a very right-wing family, Jewish family in Hebron, and he never had a normal conversation with a Palestinian. And he let me go, and when I look at the mirror, I saw the car start moving. He didn't become Gandhi, but I'm sure he's not the same person anymore. So that was a very, very interesting, I mean, story.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
You should tell Maxim Watch about this.
Yeah, there are many stories. I mean, it's like...
So... When you are getting ready to go into a situation and you think there may be some trouble, how do you prepare yourself?
I'm 24 hours prepared, because when you live over there, any time, any minute, you have to be ready. All what I do every day and every minute in my life, I just try to go back to the human being inside me. Believe me if I say that before my engagement in nonviolence, I was a very weak person, because I have fear. I have fear of the other, and I have fear of myself. After I become a nonviolence activist, today I come to checkpoints or I face soldiers and I feel much stronger than them, because they are stuck. So... Yeah, there is enough humanity in the Middle East. There is enough humanity in Israel and Palestine for me to be strong. So I'm not the only person. We have heroes over there, of people who really has proved that this conflict can be solvable. Yeah.
That leads me to ask, could you say a little bit about Tahir and your work?
Well, after so many years in dialogue, reconciliation, and joint activities, I have decided to start creating a Palestinian national nonviolence movement, because I have realized that dialogue will not be enough. We're not equal. By the end of the day, it's the relation between the occupied and the occupier. Most of the Palestinians will not be ready to speak to Israelis. And if they do speak to Israelis, I'm not sure that this will serve their life conditions. People go to these, you know, nice meetings and dialogues. They hug each other and they eat hummus and they go to 5-star peace conferences and they go back to refugee camps, where they have no water in their houses. Nonviolence is not about feeling good with the other or feeling good with ourselves. Nonviolence is to be able to change your own life conditions. Actually, nonviolence is not a tactic or a strategy. Nonviolence is an identity. It's a mentality. So when we identified with nonviolence, nonviolence become our only way to exist. So this is what is Tahrir about. Tahrir is not also just for solving problems. تغيير is to create a culture that will prevent from problems, to target social issues, cultural issues, political issues, and to resist the Israeli occupation non-violently.
It sounds to me that what you're talking about is constructive program.
Yeah, I think to be strategized is very, very important, because it's like a marathon. You can run forever if you don't know where are you going. So you have to put a strategy, you have to have a vision, a goal, a mission, a tools. The nonviolence is a whole life structure. So it's not just an activity or an event. That's nonviolence. And because of our failure on leadership in Palestine, and because of interior conflicts between political parties, because of corruption by politicians and by all because of the occupation, we are more in need for nonviolence. So it's not just the human part of us. It's even the practical political mind who tell us that nonviolence is our best career to freedom, if we want to be free.
So that was Ali Abu Awad from Tahrir, an organization working to create a movement of nonviolence in Israel-Palestine. And that was from the rough cut of a documentary on nonviolence called The Journey Home that's in the process of being made. And Awad came to Qatari in our local area in Sonoma County just last week to give a talk at Ner Shalom to a large group of people who were interested again in taking his ideas and putting them into practice in some very concrete ways. And hearing from people like Awad is hugely inspirational, because he's not speaking from books. He's speaking directly from experience. As he said, he learned everything about nonviolence directly from his life in Israel-Palestine and also from his time in prison. So there you have it, that prison at times can serve as universities. So we have just a few minutes left of Nonviolence Radio. And as we were saying in the first segment, in Nonviolence in the News, music also plays a really important role. And for our next show here on Nonviolence Radio, we'll be in fundraising season for our mother station. So we want to give a little preview of that need and necessity of music in our world. So, Michael, why don't you tell us about this Pete Seeger song that you really wanted to share?
I wanted to share this because it's from a collection of poems that Pete played that had to do with the Spanish Civil War. And many people are getting interested in the Spanish Civil War now, because that's what condemned Europe to Nazism and violence. And I'm afraid that there's a concern that that's where we may be at, 1936.
Okay.
But take it away.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Michael Negler. And I'm going to have this go on as we begin to exit the studio. So I'm going to say my goodbyes now to everybody. Thank you to our mother station, KWMR, to all of our listeners, to the staff and volunteers at the Meta Center for Nonviolence, and to everybody. Till the next time, take care of one another and stay in touch.
Okay, here we go.
All right, take one.
Los cuatro generales, los cuatro generales. Los cuatro generales, mamita mía, serán alzados, serán alzados. Para la noche buena, para la noche buena, para la noche buena, mamita mía, serán ahorcados, serán ahorcados. The four insurgent generals, the four insurgent generals, the four insurgent generals, mamita mia, they tried to betray us, they tried to betray us. Next Christmas, holy evening. Next Christmas, holy evening. Next Christmas, holy evening, mamita mia. They'll all be hanging, they'll all be hanging. Madrid, que bien resistes. Madrid, que bien resistes. Madrid, que bien resistes, mamita mia. Los bombardeos, los bombardeos. Madrid, you wondrous city. Madrid, you wondrous city. Madrid, you wondrous city, mamita mia. They wanted to take you, they wanted to take you. But your courageous children, but your courageous children, but your courageous children, mamita mia, they did not disgrace you, they did not disgrace you. Los cuatro generales, los cuatro generales, los cuatro generales, mamita mia.